welcome to today's podcast. It's worth considering. Does it seem to you that the Christian life is a bit out of control? Well, if you think so, you're not alone. This short podcast is to help all of us consider the teachings of Christ, even in these confusing times. I am Pastor David, the assistant pastor at Bethel Gilead Community Church, also known as the Church on Block Road. My co-hosts for this discussion are Matthew and Daniel Anderson. We are continuing our discussion, how we must market the gospel. Now, this might seem a bit sacrilegious or at least unspiritual. Believe me, it is a conversation well worth having. As Christians, we need to meet people where they are at. This includes knowing how God has designed humankind and how best to present the good news of the gospel. We are to be wise as serpent, but harmless as doves, as the scriptures say. Get ready to be challenged.
The church I'm attending now has almost 10,000 members that attend over the, over like 8 different campuses. And there's an audience for that. But I would say even at the church I'm attending, nearly every sermon connects back to the gospel in a way that would be seeker-friendly. And so, that's an example of a church that's definitely geared toward the further end of the customer awareness spectrum. But they're doing it in a way that is, it still contains parts of that message that applies to, to other people.
Sure. All right. So let me break this down now. And we need to know our audience.
I heard a ding.
We need to hear.
The ding doesn't mean anything.
We need to hear. Ding. That's my turn. What we need to break this down in the fact that, for example, I spent 20 years in education, and one of the big changes that moved through was No Child Left Behind. And the idea is that we are not teaching a subject, we're teaching students. So when you have 30 students within your classroom, it is the teacher's responsibility to reach those students. The old method was, you get up there, you give the information, and it is the responsibility of the student to grasp that information. The profound difference is that we all learn differently. So when you create a lesson plan, some are visual learners. You have to incorporate that into your lesson, that this message needs to be attainable through visual. Others will be tactical. You have to make sure that they can get up and move around, and that will help emphasize. Some are going to be audio. Some are going to be. Some are going to have to read. And so it really put the burden of education onto the teacher. And in the same way, the burden really of reaching the congregants, or let me put it this way, to evangelizing, is to finding out the needs of those that you want to share this good news with, instead of just building a building and say, hey, it's your responsibility to come to church. I think that's a profound shift in our culture today. And I think, Matthew, your discussion as to how, you want to, if you're talking to a salesman, you want to make the sale. You want to sell your product because you believe in it and somebody is going to benefit from your product. Is that a fair assessment?
I think something else.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, definitely.
I think another thing you were saying along those lines, where you're talking about this paradigm shift in pedagogy, would be in Matthew's book, he emphasized with marketing the importance of telling stories, that reaches people, and that you need to, understand your message well enough to be able to tell it, even through story form. And how does that perfectly relate with the gospel, right? A matter of telling stories, case studies, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, yeah. Good point, Dan. I think you had mentioned that, is the telling of stories. If you watched
I stole that from Matthew.
Oh, good. If you watched The Chosen, which I love, there's a scene where Jesus is confronting this mob at Capernaum. And there's Jews and there's Greeks and such. And he says, well, as a Jew, we like to tell story. And everybody goes, oh, no. And but the effectiveness of being able to use stories is incredible. And that's what of course, you watch that episode, and that's a part of the culture then, and it is a part of the, it's part of our human makeup. We like stories. We tell our little children stories, right? And as adults, we watch entertainment, which are all stories, you know, dramas that are playing out. So, yeah, it would make perfect sense that we give testimonials, that we give stories, and those are all, you know, qualitative evidence of what we're trying to convey.
Yeah, that fits right into page 39 where Matthew was talking about how ads don't work without a quality message, which is why his book is called, you know, How Fix Your Message First, you know. Anyway, and that your ads have to be influenced by that, by your message. You understand your message. So, I mean, practically, like, we need to understand the gospel, what our message is, and be able to convey it in a simple way and understand how it is that our audience can receive that. But you guys can...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to bring it back to evangelism, you sometimes see criticism of kind of a more contemporary sermon style where, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's just one story after another. And, you know, those criticisms maybe have a place in, you know, the way some pastors will give a sermon and water the message down too far. But if you think about it, it is almost impossible for us to think about anything without putting it in a story form. Our thoughts almost always have a beginning and a middle and the end, and they progress from some sort of complication to another. And, you know, we understand in many ways the way we understand the world is through expectations of, you know, what will happen when we do things. Well, those are stories. You know, if I throw the ball, it's going to hit the ground. Or if I throw the ball at the window, it's going to break the window. You know, that's just a little micro story.
They have conflict, right? There's got to be drama. There's got to be conflict. Otherwise, why in the world are you telling the story?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one of the things I talk about, you know, if whether you're doing marketing or whether you're doing evangelism, if you can look at your message and you can't identify the story structure in there, it's probably going to be ineffective. If you don't have conflict, if you don't have characters, you know, even if those characters are ideas or problems, you will lose your audience's attention. People will have a hard time understanding what you're saying. And if they don't understand what you're saying, it's not going to make a difference in their lives.
Sure.
So it's your responsibility as the communicator to make sure, you know, if you really care about the idea and you really do believe that it's in the best interest of the people you're talking to believe that idea or to be influenced by it, make sure that you're using the tools that are embedded in human nature to communicate effectively.
Yeah. So in Evangelism Explosion, one of the first questions that you would use to approach somebody in the conversation is, you know, hey, do you mind if I talk to you about your spiritual life? And it would start off with, for example, if you were to die today, God forbid that you would, but if then you were to be standing before heaven's gates, what would you say to God that says that he would allow you into heaven? You know,
or purgatory.
Or purgatory. That's always the great escape. Please send me to purgatory because that way it's better.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
But there's a storyline once, and you brought them into this story by placing them in this setting where they can yes. relate.
Yeah, no, that's a very well-crafted marketing message. If you think about what's happening in the mind of someone that you're talking to there, you can't help but imagine, okay, there's these pearly gates and I'm standing before them and now I'm standing before God and I have to say something. And, you know, the exact picture that is in someone's mind when you're saying it is going to be different person to person. But the very fact that you're imagining that happening is a very well-crafted story. And those images can't help but influence the person who is receiving them.
Sure. That's going to be marketing. And if they say, well, I'll worry about that when I get there, then you can change the storyline. Oh, really? What else in life do you simply worry about when you come across it? You know, do you do that? Yeah. Do you do that for your health? Do you do that for your education? Do you that do you do that for your children? Or do you give thought and energy because those things are important to you?
Yeah, car insurance, health insurance, home insurance.
Yeah, you want to research it, right?
Yeah, and so, you know, if you think about it, those reactions are automatic, you know, to a story or to a question or to, you know, any form of communication. It will cause automatic reactions in the mind of your audience. You want to make sure it's not causing them to tune you out. But those reactions then you can use to begin to influence people. And, you know, in some ways, marketing is just a study of how human beings operate and how they behave under conditions of receiving a message.
Okay. Hey,
it's amazing how personal this marketing is. I mean, think of marketing, a business class, boring or manipulative or certainly unrelated to the gospel. But you look into it like, oh my goodness, like identifying your customer's needs, but also understanding what their skepticism or, you know, blocks to acceptance might be.
Sure.
Hey, if you're selling a product or if you're presenting the gospel, yeah, you need to know people's needs and you need to know what are the roadblocks that they're having.
Yeah. I mean, we can relate to many of their needs, right? The sense of wanting significance, a feeling of loss and what is life about. I think those are all common experiences that we need to pull back from our own experience to be able to realize. You're right, Dan. I think that's a really good point. Hey, I'm going to do something. I want to talk about my church, my community here. And Matt, I'm going to give you an opportunity to say, what are the things that we need to consider, I need to consider, to be able to move forward in reaching the people of Branch County in my area. But before I do...
Well, do you have any statues?
No. They did up
okay,
in...
Okay, that's a good start.
We can borrow some from the Catholic Church. I think they have some that are probably available. But how? Well, before I get there...
I wouldn't recommend adopting idols, but...
Oh, wow. Here we go again.
But hey, before I do that, I want to tie this back. About to the first Great Awakening and the second Great Awakening and the profound difference between these, because I think it really sets the stage for what we're going to be talking about. In the first Great Awakening, just as a bit of history, we had George Whitfield, I should say, and he came from England, and he came and first of all he started bashing many of the pastors of New England colonies, that their churches are dead, this, that, and the other. He was very theatrical. He got some attention, but realized that he was being too harsh because people weren't responding. So he tempered his message. And there was this, at that time, it was very Calvinistic, meaning that God's providence, they strongly believed that everything is according to God's predetermined, you know, purposes. And but yet they were very sensitive to make sure that they were changing their approach. And so it was very spirit-oriented, okay? This Great Awakening, people coming in tens of thousands to hear George Whitfield and as he would present his sermons, and they were very theatrical. He had a background in theater. But he always would contribute it to, the Holy Spirit. But yet, that piece of drama, that storytelling, to be able to use his voice and position his stage, and then using the media, he used the newspapers, and Benjamin Franklin published his sermons, and they spread out, and then he used other people to go ahead and to prepare the way before he came into a town, so that they would know that he was coming and they would already have received pamphlets about some of his messages. You know, so it's kind of like Jesus sending out the 12. Then we have move into the second Great Awakening, and that's going to be Charles Finney. He says, listen, we have to take advantage of the press. We have to take advantage of laymen. We have to take advantage of preparing the soil, and that is not spiritual. He goes, we do have to pray, but God will always honor his word. So therefore, let's just go out, do the homework, do the woodwork, all the hard work, and let's present the gospel and there will be a response. And that approach we see today, you know, with the Franklin Graham, he just went all the way along down, well, by down by you, Matthew, along Texas, all the way up to California with about seven different stops. And he prepared the way and communities, and then he came and he had his big open, you know, presentation, and people responded. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah, and so we're seeing that there are things that are spiritual. We're not saying that God's spirit, matter of fact, God honors His word and the message of the gospel, as you said, Matthew. We don't want to water that down, but we want to do everything we can, do our homework, so that those bridges are being built and that they effectively, you know, they're being built and people can come to Christ because of it. So, all right. So what we're talking about is spiritual, all right? But it is also practical. And practically speaking, Matthew.
Well, just because it's practical doesn't mean it's not spiritual also.
Well,
if you believe that human beings are fundamentally spiritual, the message that you communicate to them and the responses they have are at least in part spiritual.
Yeah, good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. There is no division between secular and spiritual. We are.
Can I butt in here?
Sure, go ahead, Dan.
I love your talking about the first and the second Great Awakenings and what you can glean from methods that they used, Whitfield or later Finney and Moody. I think too often I find that sort of thing being poo-pooed. I mean, I know, unfortunately, the history in the Catholic Church, evangelism has obviously been extremely powerful with St. Francis or whatever. But anyway, typically now, I was talking with a Baptist pastor, and I said, you know, it's really strange. I'm doing the St. Paul Street Evangelization, and so often Catholics seem to think that's for fundamentalists to be doing, you know, what the heck? And in the past, the Baptist pastor retorted that, don't think that's just Catholic. What we're getting in the Baptist church is, well, that's the pastor's job. And these things that we're talking about, these psychological things and these thinking through how it is, what is your message, where is your audience, what are the obstacles they're having, how are you going to approach this and tailor this into the different, you know, markets, that is, practical / spiritual, absolutely. So I love at the end of Matthew's book, we're on page 224, he talks about you have actually a moral duty to advertise effectively.
Oh, wow.
Because so often we can think, I can't ask for money. I mean, that sounds worldly. And like, maybe I don't really believe God to supply. Or I can't ask somebody, you know, like through an altar call or whatever, because, you know, they might think that through the organ music or whatever, the worship band, that we're manipulating, or the incense, you know, or whatever it is, that we're just manipulating people. No, we're dealing with human psychology. Sure, it could be manipulative. Hey, what could not be used in a bad way? Duh, right?
Okay.
But that you have a moral duty to advertise. Ask for the sale, right? Do you want to expound on that, Matthew?
Well, yeah, I can. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that if you really believe that your message is in the best interest of your audience and your audience has a real problem that maybe they don't know how to deal with, walking away from that is, walking away from trying to communicate effectively is basically depriving them of the help they need. And I can't think of anything else that's more disrespectful or, you know, in some ways immoral than not helping people that you can help. Being in marketing now for almost 25 years, I've had hundreds of clients, and I would say one pattern I've seen is that my clients who are the best people with the best motivations and who've really developed products that truly help people are almost always the ones that are most reluctant to market their product effectively.
Wow.
Because, you know, they just assume that a good product will sell itself. And that's not the case. I've seen some of them who, you know, ought to have made, you know, and helped millions of people end up going out of business because they just are reluctant to engage in marketing because they think it's manipulative. And I see the same tendency in the church sometimes, where we stay cloistered in our buildings and try to serve the needs of the community, but we're not willing to do what it takes to reach people in our culture. Every time I read the Gospels, it reminds me of the Pharisees who were critical of Jesus and the disciples for engaging in conversation, even sharing meals with sinners. If you're not willing to go out and actually find people where they're at and communicate them to them in ways that they're going to hear it, I have to wonder if you're actually fulfilling the commands of the Great Commission.
Well, thank you for spending time to listen to today's podcast, the second in the series, Commanded to Be Wise as Serpents, but Innocent as Doves. We hope you continue to tune in and don't drop out as we continue with conversations that make a difference in our lives. Until the next time, go out as God's ambassadors, commissioned to a world in desperate need of the gospel. God bless.